Welcome back, everyone, to the Thrived Podcast. I am your thriving host, Michelle Cohn, and I am so excited to use this platform to educate, empower, and inspire each one of you. My purpose in this life is to truly impact the lives of everyone that I meet in one small way or another. I have discovered that my mess has turned into my message, my test into my testimonial to all of you. Episode 11, y'all. Can you believe it? Well, you are in for a treat because in this episode, I have brought in a very special guest. But before I introduce this person and get into some Q&A, I wanted to share another short lesson learned on what not to say to someone that is living a life with any kind of mental illness and the reasons why. This lesson is important because there are certain words and even phrases that trigger the emotions that exist around having a mental illness. What we ultimately want is to relax. What our goal is to calm down. And what we are striving for is to just get over it. Unfortunately, all of these phrases are a few of the top five things to never say to someone living a life with a mental illness. Going back to past episodes, a panic attack begins with a trigger. Then that transitions into a thought or a limiting belief. Then that transitions into worry, and then transitions into a downward spiral of physical symptoms, leading to the panic attack. This strand of complete debilitating frustration happens within seconds. That is how quickly our brain translates flight or fight mode. When I was in the highest peak of my fight mode and someone would say, "Just breathe, you're fine, just calm down," my body and my brain are fighting against one another to do all of that. But the two do not work together with a snap of a finger. The body needs to calm down on its own after it knows that it's not in any real harm. Did you know that the average panic attack lasts anywhere between 20 to 30 minutes? So the next time you are surrounded by someone that is going through a panic attack, it's best to just follow their lead. They will tell you what to do. And most of the time, it's to just be there. And speaking of just being there, this leads me to the introduction of my first guest on this podcast. This person, well, is just a godsend to me, and I don't put him in my five that keeps me alive group for no reason. Friends, please welcome one of my best friends on planet Earth, my brother Mike. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, we are excited for you to be here, and let's get into the questions. So, Mike, question number one, you are one of my top listeners of this podcast. Can you share with my friends why you listen and what you are learning about mental illness from it?
Sure. First and foremost, I listen to your podcast to support you. You have said each time you begin a new episode that your intention for this podcast is to educate, empower, and inspire each one of your listeners with the hope that you will truly impact them. The great thing about a podcast is you don't have to meet every one of your listeners, and they can certainly meet you when they tune in. Although I'm fairly familiar with it, I listen to hear your story. We can all benefit from hearing someone else's struggle, their perspective, their strategies, their coping mechanisms, and with you, your successes. As for what I'm learning about mental illness, really nothing new, to be honest. But what I am learning is your story. We are hearing from the source, the things you went through and the things you continue to go through in an open, honest, and transparent way. It's far more authentic when you're receiving advice from someone who has had troubles rather than some expert who has read a bunch of books. For those living with a mental illness, I think it's important to keep hearing certain mantras and adages, knowing also, not just hearing, that you are not alone, and knowing that there are things you can do to still thrive while living with a mental illness is important as well.
Well, that's great. And I appreciate you sharing that. And of course, listening to the podcast. And as you can tell, my mess has definitely turned into my message. So question number two, you are an elementary school special ed teacher. Do you notice an increase in anxiety and or depression amongst the students in your school? And if yes, do you feel that there is a sufficient support for them?
I did think about this, quite long and hard being in education now for just about 12 years. I don't know if I can say for certain that there is an increase in anxiety and or depression amongst our students. And I am speaking in terms from the elementary school background. I can say this, however, I think more and more is being expected of the teachers of the students, and therefore that stress can easily make the classroom more of an anxious environment. Mm-hmm. From what I have read, watched, and heard, I can only imagine the pressure and therefore anxiety that secondary education students probably feel. As life begins to creep up on them and there is more societal pressure to be older and their college or careers are in front of them, and the decreasing involvement of their parents, I can see how middle and high school students can easily become depressed or suffer from anxiety. For those who don't know, I struggled myself with a bit of depression, but mine came to a peak in college. I was 3 hours from home, trying to do it all on my own, living in a cold and cloudy small central New York town. It was my junior year when I was spending more time shut in my small apartment bedroom than anywhere else. I was miserable on the inside while trying to be the fine on the outside. What I'm trying to say here is that as we grow older and more responsibilities are piling up on our plates, mental illness is definitely more likely to come. But finishing off your question, I do not think there is sufficient support for students who might be suffering from mental illness. I am certainly no expert in what is out there or available, but for the students I have worked with who have shown signs of mental illness or have threatened to harm themselves, do not get adequate support now.
Well, I appreciate that feedback, and you know, maybe moving forward, it could be something that, you know, is possibly something that could be better looked at and come up with a strategy for those students that are going through this, because this is something, like you said, going through in the college level that they will face, you know, unfortunately, as they get older. So hopefully stopping it at a younger age could prevent that. So,
right.
So that's a good thing to look at for the future. In speaking on support in my last episode on asking for help, can you share a time that I asked you for help?
So when you first, when I heard your podcast last episode saying that there was going to be a special guest, I did wonder if it was going to be me. So I did actually start to think of potential questions or things that you might have, that you might bring up. And so I did actually think about this exact question, and forgive me, but I can't actually recall a specific time when you asked me for help. And maybe you could refresh my memory. I mean, I don't remember you calling me in some desperation saying, you know, Mike, I need help. But what I definitely do remember is our countless conversations on the porch where we would just talk to one another, listen to one another, and be there for each other in both our times of need, even if we didn't vocalize that we actually did need it. I think without saying those exact words, you helped me as much as I helped you, or at least I certainly hope I did.
Well, absolutely. And I must say that the time that it comes into my mind, and I remember it when it was yesterday, as if it were yesterday, where I was and what the situation was. I was actually on my way to my second therapy appointment, and I knew that mom or dad could not drive me to it. And I called you up, and I just was talking to you about it. And I believe that the moments that we had with each other, sitting on the porch, being open with one another, sharing that safe space together, was what prompted you to do what you always did, and that was just listen. And the sound in my voice was, I have to get in the car, I have to drive to the therapy appointment, I don't know how I'm gonna do this, I'm so nervous. And what came out of your mouth was, why don't I just drive you there? And the part of me that felt as if every weight off of my shoulders was gone, it's out of those words. And I feel that it was our foundation of trust and communication and the relationship that we had, that you just knew. And again, you were just there. Do you remember that?
I do.
Okay. Question number 4, what is the message you would like those that are living with loved ones or know a loved one that is living a life with a mental illness?
The message I would like to pass along, I think, is fairly simple, to just be there for each other. You've just mentioned that, and I certainly agree with you. For me, mental illness is a scale. You know, someone like me, it was just a brief moment in my life that I knew I was living with depression, and it has, you know, since cured itself, or I've just, you know, just gotten better. It was just a moment for me. But I know for others, it's an everyday struggle, which can be debilitating. And then there are those in between. So if you know of someone, a loved one, anyone who might suspect has a mental illness or is just going through a hard time, be there for them. Make yourself available, follow up, keep following up. I would rather think it would be better to be called annoying than regretful that you weren't there for someone.
That is absolutely true. It's, and like I said from the beginning, sometimes we don't know the person that is in this panic attack situation. We don't know what it is sometimes that's causing it. And just for somebody to just be there, just be present, just hold our hand, just give us that sense of safe space and support. That's all that we need sometimes. And I think that that advice is something that everybody that knows somebody living with a mental illness, any of that, I think that that is just is the best thing, is just to be there. Because if you're not, that could be something that could be regretful. And the last question, any last thoughts before we end our Q&A?
My answer to the last question really is a message for everyone, not just those who are living with a loved one or know of a loved one that is living a life with a mental illness. We should all be there for one another. More phone calls need to be made to those we don't see or talk to on a regular basis. More get-togethers need to be planned. More handwritten cards and letters need to be sent. We all need to shine our light to those around us. Basically, just love one another and let all that you do be done in love.
I love that advice, and I love that last thought, because, you know, just time. Time is something that we will never, ever, ever be able to get back. And the more present we are with one another, the more times we speak on love and appreciation and gratitude every day, not just on holidays, birthdays, you know, anything like that. It just should be done more often. And, you know, telling people that they mean something to you, I think that that's all great advice. Well, there you have it, friends. My brother is proof that surrounding yourself with someone supportive or a community of supportive people is true medicine. There is strength in numbers, and there is powerful strength when we are not feeling our strongest. And we don't need to be strong all the time. I thank you so much, Mike, for continuing to join me on my journey on speaking truth and discovering hope to those that are living lives with mental illnesses and to those that support those living with mental illnesses. Raising awareness around the stigma of mental illness is crucial in this day and age. You know that I appreciate you, you know that I love you, and I thank you for your continued support. Until then, my friends, keep thriving.